This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of Cinematic Animalia, the podcast where we look at the physiology or ecology of someone's favourite movie monster, demon, creature, fishy man who you should definitely not have sex with. And we try and see how they would work in the real world. Today, we are doing something a little different. We are looking at a list of some of the best and worst movie scientists out there. But before we get into that, co-host number one is not here today, so permanent co-host number two, Dave, is here with us. Dave, our vet friend. Dave, do you know where Adam is this week?
I thought that Adam's goal this week was that he was attempting to pick up where your research had left off, and he was attempting to strengthen relationships between humans and moose. Some kind of... Like, I know that it's been a little bit of a contentious history between you two groups.
Yeah.
And I know you hadn't made that many strides into getting any acts of forgiveness or anything like that.
No. And our podcast the last 2 weeks, we were dealing with a very moosey creature. The moose community did not deal well with our perceived slight on their ability. So Adam's off as an ambassador for the human population, trying to repair relations with the moose. In actual fact, in a rare moment of seriousness concerning an absence, Adam is revising hard for his PhD candidacy exam. So if you want to go and tweet at him, at Harsic Adam, he would very much appreciate the support, everybody.
You are the dumbest smart person I have ever met in my life.
Yeah, but I think we can dispense with the news today and get straight into it.
All right.
Sound good? So what we're going to do today is just go through kind of a random list of some of the best and worst movie scientists out there. We're trying to keep it to do with, you know, biology in general, the animal world, that sort of thing. But we will stray a little bit at times because there's quite a few we want to cover. We're just going to kind of go back and forth between Dave and I. We have decided, and I haven't informed Dave of this decision yet because we didn't get to it beforehand. That we're actually going to stay away from Jurassic Park scientists on this one.
Okay.
I put out, you know, kind of a, hey, who should we talk about? And half of it was just Jurassic Park scientists. I think we have enough for an entire episode on that at some point. And we definitely have enough material to talk about just the science in Jurassic Park in general one day.
Which I feel like is a good choice.
Yes, that'll definitely be happening later this year.
Yeah, and we're definitely not ruling out that any of the movies we talk about, we would do some of the creatures from those movies at a later date as well.
Yes. And we'll also just be talking about, like, the portrayal of science in general, whether or not there are, you know, there might, some of these that we're talking about today are fantastic characters, but they're very shit scientists. Yeah. All right, Dave, do you want to start us off? Do you want to pick one?
Yeah, I would really like to start with, because he's my absolute, so we've got a list of best and worst in terms of, and we're going to kind of be moving between the scientists. Sam and I will start with something like best and then indicate sort of our scientist versus worst.
Yeah.
So in terms of best, because I think that's a good place to try and start, I'd like to start with Dr. Robert Neville from I Am Legend.
Okay, yep.
So for those who haven't seen the film, the idea basically is a virus known as the Crippen virus ends up getting unleashed on the human population in an attempt to try and control for cancer, basically using a retrovirus. It spreads, killing off the vast majority of the population, turning another percentage of the population into these strange vampire-like creatures, and leaving a small percentage of the population immune that the vampire creatures go feeding on. Will Smith ends up playing the lead character, who is the scientist that's attempting to sort of figure out how to reverse this process, how to save humanity, how to fix things.
Yeah, and he's immune to it, right?
Yeah, he's got natural immunity, so okay. As does a small percentage of the rest of the population. And obviously he's got his dog Sam, one of the favorite characters of the entire film. that is not necessarily, there's no airborne version for the dogs. There is an airborne version for humans. So if dogs are bit, they do unfortunately contract the virus similar to rabies.
Yeah. That's kind of an interesting concept in film, like whether or not the disease commutes to animals as well, and which ones it does.
Yeah, as well as I really like the concept of, like, just as a brief overview for everybody that freaks out about epidemics and pandemics, airborne viruses don't work very well. Viruses do not transmit well in the air. Most of the time when they do, you're thinking about like coughing and throwing like small mucusy or watery droplets into the air that contain the virus. Those don't tend to go very far. So it's rare that we get like a truly like effective airborne virus unless it's actually designed or built or it's some type of spore. Yeah. So this was kind of a fun, the shift between the two different groups. But the science in this, in terms of like the concept of like the retrovirus and them attempting to cure cancer and having something mutate into something more, was what I thought was a really interesting concept. But Dr. Robert Neville in the film is actually portrayed as a pretty good scientist.
Yeah.
He's got a sterile facility that he keeps in his lower unit or the basement that he goes down to. He keeps detailed records, basically tracking all of his tests. The animals, in terms of like as he's moving through, he's got super strong variables associated with, you know, he's controlling for light, he's controlling for temperature, he's controlling for the age and the gender of the specimens that he's using. He does have animal models that he tests on first in terms of the rats that he exposes to the virus.
Yeah.
Normally
I'd be very critical of like, because this is something we're going to run into a lot today, the constant upscaling of it works on a rat, therefore it's going to work on a human.
Right.
But he's got nothing else to work with in this case, so I totally get it, yeah.
Right, and he's still capturing some of the affected humans and using them for his project, the Nightwalkers, or I can't remember what the exact title is. But I guess, and the other thing I really like is that he's been at this for a very long time. Like, when yeah. we're down in the lab, he says something, you know, like, experiment 2042 or something along those lines. Like, yeah. Science is a super long process.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Right. And which I really, like, it isn't something that just got cured overnight, or, you know, he's like, oh, I just had to find this rare plant. Like, he's experimenting with the same chemicals that he thinks will get results, but he's got to change variables associated. He's got to adjust dosage. And it was just like, it was a really good scientist in terms of, like, his movement through. I mean, Will Smith is a great actor most of the time, and he did a really good science role in this. Also, I love his dog, so.
Yeah.
Yep. And he goes to Kurt Connors, who is the lizard.
Yep.
Who he knows has been working with lizards.
Right.
And regrowing
lizards. Smallville syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, excuse me, Dr. Connors. And the doctor turns around and he's kind of thinning on one side of his hair, and he's got like scales down right. his neck. And he's like, ah! Like, he's like that. And he's like, could you tell me how to kill a giant lizard?
All right, well, my turn then. I'll go with the worst one. I don't hate this film, despite what a lot of people say. Kurt Connors, the lizard from The Amazing Spider-Man.
I hate this film.
Yeah, look, I've rewatched it recently because my kid loves all the Spider-Man films. And look, it's not as good as when I remembered it, but I think it's better than Spider-Man 1 and 2, like the original Tobey Maguire's. You go back and watch them. I really don't think they hold up. I think they have aged terribly. But, I mean, they're good for what they are. Like I said, they were great back then. And, you know, they were forerunners for good superhero material. So, but look, this guy just frustrates me so much. For starters, it's one of these things where he's in an environment there's a lot of machinery in there. Admittedly, there's a few animals going around, but fucking lab coats, man. I hate lab coats in movies, because so many times you've just got a scientist and you chuck a lab coat on him, her, them, whatever, and it's so unnecessary. There's White lab coats is not the scientist's uniform. A scientist is more likely to be wearing jeans and a fucking flannel shirt, okay?
Yeah.
Or a daggy t-shirt. That is what we fucking wear. We do not wear lab coats. Oh, I saw this... Sorry, I'll get away from the lab coat rant in a second. But my last... I was watching... Do you remember that John Oliver section that he does on climate
science? On science? Yeah.
Why the fuck would a climate scientist be wearing a lab coat? Like, what are they going out and testing? Like...
The climate.
Yeah, what require... They are sitting right in front of computers running models. I guarantee you they're doing statistical analysis. You do not need a lab coat for that.
Right, and even in facilities that have to keep perfect rules associated with, you know, cleanliness and everything like that, you're more likely to have, you know, gloves or sterile gowns if you're doing something along those lines. I mean, lab coats get dirty, they get mucky, they're uncomfortable. I mean, they are not the ideal, and like, don't get me wrong, occasionally you do wear it, but it's usually when you're attempting to protect yourself from some type of chemical that's going to stain your underlying clothes.
Yeah.
I've done lots of lab work, and those are the primary situations of I'm working with something and I'm like, oh, I really like this stupid t-shirt I'm wearing. I'm going to put on a lab coat so I can protect my t-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the second common concept that that Kurt Connors, if you haven't seen the film, he's essentially, he's trying to regenerate limbs. He's had a bit of success. Progress has kind of stalled until Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man comes along with the formula. He's worried that they're going to shut his project down. Fucking anybody will fund you.
Right, right. Over literally, right, Osborne's lackey shows up, the Dr. Rafa.
Yeah.
Right, and it's just like, oh, well, you know, we're going to shut it down, or we're going to go test this formula on the Veterans Association if you don't let us, you know, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Report them, and yes, then go work for literally anyone else.
You have just had a major breakthrough. You've fucking produced a regrown limb on a mouse. Now, that, like, as we said earlier, the whole, you know, mouse-to-human thing doesn't translate well, but that is tangible progress. Yes. I don't care how long you've been working on it for. As we just said, these things take a long time. You are going to be fine. You are going to be so well funded. The military of any country, don't go to North Korea, but most nice countries, they will...
Right, and yes, you are going to have a confidentiality agreement that's probably binding some of your research or something like that. They're really not that difficult to get around, as terrible as it is to say.
Yeah.
Like...
But more, just a bit more on like the upscaling of like, okay, we've tested this on a mouse, now let's apply it to a human. Like, nothing is ever that simple. Like, for instance, we talked about this briefly the other week. I was listening to the podcast Batman versus King Kong, right? And they were joking. It was a very funny episode. I will say they were joking about, you know, Batman sneaking into zoos at night and testing his tranquilizer for King Kong on random gorillas. Yep, I would enjoy seeing that. Yep. Now, especially since, you know, the King Kong from Batman 2004 is just a really big silverback gorilla. You would think that makes sense. You know, you test on something smaller, it scales up, but that's not how it works. Like, you can't just increase the amount of trank by, like, the amount of increase you have in the body size. You have to consider metabolism, the speed that the blood is going to be flowing around the body. It might not work. Even if it works on a normal day, it might not work if there's a shitload of adrenaline flowing through a system. Upscaling is not that easy.
No, and on top of all of that is you could go in the opposite direction where Batman thinks he's scaled it up and hits a point where it starts interfering with respiratory function or communication, and he drinks King Kong and he's like, oh, Batman doesn't kill. And he's like, oh, Batman killed.
Yeah, Batman killed, yeah, because Batman's a shitty scientist. We won't get into too much of how shit a scientist Batman is, but yeah.
I mean, that it depending on which version you're looking at. I mean, Batman is very much, his science skills are usually limited to typing something into the Bat computer and then being like, ah, good Bat computer. So the Bat computer is actually a decent scientist.
Fair enough. Yes, we'll get into some more Batman world scientists later on. For the moment, the last thing I want to say is there's that scene in The Amazing Spider-Man where they're standing there and they're running the same experiment again and again until, you know, they get a good result on growing the leg back on the mouse, right?
Yeah.
we have computers these days that can just run slight permutations of everything overnight. Just fucking set a program, do some simulations, come back the next morning and you're fine. Yep. Peter can go as pick his aunt up. Uncle Ben doesn't die. You fucking killed Uncle Ben.
You can definitely run computer models. Yeah. And it doesn't... It makes absolutely no sense the way that they're going about it. And it's also the jump to human testing right away. As Sam was saying, so the reason that clinical trials take forever and there's so much middle ground is because you have to test on multiple animal models to get to a point that you even consider human testing. Yeah. We're talking years. It is never a good idea in science to infect yourself with something to test on.
No. There's been a couple of interesting experiments where it has happened. Dave, you want to tell yours first? Because mine is slightly less serious.
Sure. I mean, I like to bring this one up, and I figure that Sam would also enjoy it just because of the fact that, you know, they were Australian scientists. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Barry Marshall and Dr. Robert Warren, if you get a chance to look them up, were two scientists that are responsible for discovering that there is a type of bacteria in the stomach called Helicobacter that is responsible for something like 90% of all stomach ulcers. So these two guys became big in Australia. Dr. Warren had isolated and actually found a type of bacteria in the stomach, and Dr. Barry Marshall ended up helping his research because he was a gastroenterologist. The two of them ended up sort of combining their skills and saying, hey guys, we've completely broken down what we think of human medicine and found out that this area that we thought was completely sterile and inhospitable to bacterial growth, the human stomach, can in fact grow bacteria, and they're what's responsible for breaking the stomach wall apart and creating these ulcers. And the medical community, the pharma companies, everything like that, just came together and they shit on these guys for years. They lost tons of funding. They got completely silenced in the media. They had multiple groups come out to discredit them. And remember, this is back in the day when they were still doing surgeries to remove sections of the stomach where there were particularly bad ulcers and trying to stitch that back together. And so surgeons were doing these surgeries. Psychologists were making a ton of money, or psychiatrists, psychologists, treating people for stress disorders. And Big Pharma was using antacids to try and help all these people, which was a chronic treatment. It is way better to sell a product that someone has to take every single day than it is to give someone an antibiotic and have their problem go away over, you know, the course of a week. Anyways, Dr. Barry Marshall ended up finally deciding, fuck it, made himself patient number one, drank a solution of the cultured H. pylori, sure enough, developed halitosis, developed stomach pains, developed sort of digested blood in the stool, something called melena, and then ended up treating himself with an antibiotic after he had a colleague endoscope him, prove that there was an ulcer there, document the evidence, treated himself with an antibiotic, the ulcer ended up going away, documented that it went away, and it finally got the conversation started. They have saved probably thousands of lives using this treatment. Big Pharma ended up losing a huge amount of money over these guys, and they did finally get the Nobel Prize years and years and years later. But that is one of the rare occasions where you can infect yourself.
Yeah. My other example, which is one of my absolute favorite experiments, there used to be a lot of debate about platypus venom. Because for those who don't know, that those cute little platypus, the males actually have venomous spurs on their kind of what you'd call ankles, I guess, that can lock into you. Now, the spurs themselves are incredibly fucking painful because they're two big-ass knives, right? And they, you know, they really grip in there. The hips actually interlock to force them in even further. And they also have venom. And there was this researcher, I forget the name, from the University of Melbourne in Australia, who wanted to figure out whether the pain that was caused by getting, you know, stung, I guess, by a platypus was the venom or was the spurs themselves. No. So he took a bit of platypus venom and injected it into his arm, and it was the venom that was causing the majority of the pain. It's not actually lethal to humans unless you go on a prophylactic shock. Anaphylactic shock, yeah. Anyway, moving on. Dave, who do you want to talk about next?
I can respect your opinion. Sadly, I'm not good at rejection. I'm afraid you'll have to die.
Now, we are trying to stay in the realm of scientists here. And we are kind of jumping back and forth between multiple groups. But I really loved that Sam put this in because it's a great candidate for worst. Poison Ivy from Batman and Robin.
Yeah, this is just that lab alone.
Oh my god. And so I had to rewatch some sections of Batman and Robin, which is something I'm deciding if Sam and I's friendship is actually going to take the burden that that placed.
I love that movie. As a comedy, it's fucking fantastic.
I got through like 3 Arnold Schwarzenegger one-liners and I was just like, oh god.
That's the best part. Oh, that is the best part of that movie.
You sir, so,
are crazy.
Uma Thurman ends up playing the scientist character in terms of Poison Ivy before she ends up becoming Poison Ivy. So she is in a lab facility somewhere in South America attempting to bioengineer plants to try and defend themselves against humans and receiving grants potentially from the Wayne Foundation. Pamela Isley, that's Poison Ivy.
Pamela Isley,
right.
Yeah.
Now, one, who the fuck funds that research? So I'm a little bit curious on that level, just to start with. Because it's one of those things that shows up for any, I don't care who you are, any billionaire, any big companies, any whatever it is, ethical board. And a big group of your board of directors is going to stand up and go, no, fuck no. We're not funding that.
No.
Right? Like,
absolutely insane.
Right. So the second big thing is that her facility is this giant, overgrown, grubby, disgusting setup. And where she is for some reason walking around in semi-surgical gown, where she's kind of got this cap on and this sort of attempt and what appear to be like gloves that you would use to clean the bathroom kind of thing. And she's talking about the fact she's trying to genetically engineer plants. That's not how you genetically engineer plants.
No.
We've
been genetically engineering plants for centuries. That's how we fucking got corn.
And if you're actually doing true genetic engineering, you've got a very sterile facility. You've got a big fume hood, which is, you know, or basically a safety area that has a good sterile airfield that's associated and good HEPA filters. And you're
fume
working.
Fume hood is just like an industrial massive version of your range hood that you use over your oven.
Right. And you're basically pulling out any contamination, not allowing. And this wouldn't be a true fume hood, the type that you use for genetic engineering. I'm trying to remember what the term is, but basically it creates a stable filtered airfield and also pushes air out or pushes air out and in such a way that you can't get contaminated, but you also can't contaminate your sample.
Yeah.
And you are then working inside of this sterile area using very sterile equipment, slowly mixing different things, slowly adding different compounds to try and make genetic alterations, taking place over weeks, if not months, with very, very minor changes that you can bring on. Everybody thinks genetic engineering is we mix a little bit of this and we mix a little bit of that, and you end up with a plant that has teeth and chomps on it. Now, not the way anything works. So I have no idea what type of research she thought that she was doing in this type of facility. And then she has vials of stuff everywhere. She's got these random colored pink and purple, unlabeled.
And just snakes lying around as well. Like when she falls into the earth, like there's just snakes in there. Then my second real big problem is that, you know, she comes back as Poison Ivy with, you know, she's got the big old sexy face on. She goes back into, you know, her normal weird geek scientist clothing, whatever, and goes up to Bruce Wayne, just approaches him randomly. Like, I know this is before email was a big thing, but fuck, like, find a better way to get in contact with your sponsors. Like, anyway, and goes up and presents this idea to revitalize the Earth's, you know, flora by killing, like, millions of people. Just No, you can't. There's so many better ways to do that. Like, learn scientific communication. Learn to... How have you made it this far? How have you gotten any grants whatsoever if that's how well you can pitch your projects? Anyway, it's an odd concern. There was one other thing that annoyed me. The fact that, like, there's a guy in the lab next door to her, like, she works in this facility, and she's just got no idea what's going on.
No idea. And she, like, sneaks over into his lab for the first time. Scientists are a lonely bunch, just throwing it out there. We move between labs pretty frequently. You go and get coffee with the people that are next door. You wander over to bounce ideas. You don't tend to just sit in your dark, dank, snake-filled lab all day long by yourself. There's going to be a Starbucks somewhere around that location. She definitely would have been going out with her colleagues to pick their brains.
You're meeting for a coffee break at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then the last just sort of random point was the other male scientist. He's got magnifiers on his glasses for some reason, but he's doing toxin research. And I'm like, why? What are you? Anyways, yeah, moving on.
But that scientist is hilarious. Like when he, what's the lines? Like, unfortunately, I don't deal well with rejection. I'm afraid you'll have to die.
Yeah.
Wonderful. That's one of the moments that makes me really love that movie as a comedy.
Who died made you, Einstein?
You guys know how to pole vault! We just stay where it can't get us. On these residual boulders. My truck's parked right next to one.
Right, now I just want to go over this because, you know, she's not a very well research scientist, but I really enjoyed the portrayal of a PhD student or candidate, whatever, in Tremors.
So this is our best category.
So again, not a fantastic scientist. I think she takes a bit too long to figure out that these things without eyes, you know, that tunnel under the earth are used. You know, she takes too long to figure out that the title of the movie is Tremors, basically. I really enjoy the portrayal of, like, everybody thinks she must know what's going on, and she's just like, no, I've got no fucking idea, why are you asking me? Like, especially when you get to the PhD level, your research is so, like, incredibly specialized. Dave is guilty of this on a regular basis. He'll bring up a fish, and he'll be like, we're going into Sam's territory now. And it'll be like, you know, some fish from the other side of the world, a specific part of biology that I have no interest in whatsoever. And it'll be like, so Sam, correct me if I'm wrong. And it's like,
oh. I mean, I kind of do this on purpose because I enjoy the reaction that I get each time.
Sure, sure. Okay, fine. We'll play it that way. But yeah, and they keep asking her, they're like, what do you think's going on? She's a geologist. She's not a fucking, like, you'd have to be a specialist in studying, like, I think crustaceans, because that's what we decided it was. It was like a cephalopod.
Yeah.
Not a crustacean, a cephalopod. Yeah. No, hang on.
We decided
it was a cephalopod. So you'd have to be like a specialist in squids, cuttlefish, that sort of thing to even
But even then, I mean, you can, like, I am a veterinarian. I come in every day and I do work on dogs and cats and other animals. If you brought in some form of mutated dog species that had never been seen before and you were like, David, it's in the canid family. How do you think that it breathes? How do you think that its heart works? I don't know. I'm going to have to do a post-mortem. I'm going to have to do biochemistry in it. I'm going to end up having to do multiple forms of cellular and tissue analysis.
Yeah, we're going to need to leave it in the cage with another dog, see if it fucks it, see what's going on, you know?
Like, we really have no ability to just automatically, despite what sometimes Cinematica Animalia might try to do, we really don't have a good way of just looking at things and, like, me walking over and, like, holding this, like, savage screaming thing and turning to Sam and being like, Sam, what do you think that its environmental roaming is going to look like? And Sam's like, I don't know, get that thing away from me!
Like, what sort of tree is this thing going to eat off, mainly? If it's a drop bear, then I can probably help you out. If not, no, I'm not going to be able to do that. I also really enjoy the fact that she's just out in the middle of the desert taking measurements. No supervisor, no PI, no postdoc with her. They've just sent her out by herself. Like, that is a lot of trust in a student.
And equipment.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. That equipment's going to be really fucking expensive.
Yeah, to replace as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean... I was always really interested in the aftermath of that. This is not what most people wonder about when they're thinking of Tremors. But what's that meeting going to be like when she goes back to her faculty and is like, so, I lost all our shit. There were giant worms everywhere. And I'm shacking up with a redneck now. So I guess, is she moving to whatever that big town is that's near Pleasance or...
I thought he left with her, because when they come back to Perfection...
In the second film, yeah. They're both not there. But I mean, I got the impression that she was like from ages away.
Yeah, so maybe he went with her.
Oh, good for him. Kevin Bacon's going to catch a break at some point.
Good for Ren.
Yeah. All right, what do you got next?
Reanimating people from different body parts. Probably not.
I think I wanted to have a brief discussion of Victor Frankenstein. Just because he's been portrayed in so many different film versions, movie versions, things like that. He is not a good scientist. There is no, first of all, level of development of his talents or skills in either the books or many of the film interpretations. You don't just start with bringing a human back to life. You've got to start with something smaller, all right?
Like, doesn't he try some mice or some birds in the Harry Potter one? Or am I thinking... No, I know the hell you I'm thinking of. Bloody Penny Dreadful.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, which is great, but we're not... I mean, there have been multiple versions, multiple interpretations, but I guess I'm getting more back at like the classic look and the traditional look of Victor Frankenstein is he's lost people earlier in his life. In the books, it's particular the loss of his mother. He ends up becoming obsessed with using the idea of harnessing electricity to try and bring things back. The book is actually a much better look into, you know, his process and his build up and the way that he studies and gains access to tissues, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But the films, I mean, it looks as simple as he sends out Igor. Igor brings it back a bunch of different things. He stuffs some human parts together, sets up some electricity, and then completely, right after he has success, abandons the project. Which is also not the way that science works.
Yeah.
Science has to work on the idea of studying both success and failure and learning from it, of documenting your results clearly and moving through the process, and dealing with the fact that like he's completely caught off guard for like his success of any sort. And it's like, what did you think was going to happen? Like, he has no controls, no variables, no anything like that. And most of the interpretations, he just ditches the monster.
That is the point where you like go and get some more funding. Like, you show, hey, look at this progress I've had. Can I bring like 5 back to life now? How much money are you going to give me?
And you get the rest of the scientific community involved. Yeah. Where like you're like, hey, I'm getting kind of overwhelmed with this. Does anybody want to help me deal with this absolutely major breakthrough in human medicine?
Yeah.
And you'd have like 5 arms go up of people being like, yeah, let's go.
You do not need Igor. Get yourself a research assistant. Yeah. Get yourself a fucking PhD on board. Come to think of it, where the fuck did he get his PhD?
Well, I mean, there's a whole thing about his medical school and training and everything like that.
Oh, is there? Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but no. Yeah. People like Sam and Adam, you can throw a rock and hit them anywhere. Yeah. You're going to find a desperate PhD student looking for a project to get attached to and find their next grant.
Oh,
all right?
I wouldn't give to work with a man like that. Yeah. All right, what else have we got? Let's do one more and then finish up for this week.
We are a carbon-based life form.
You pulling Dr. K?
We moved down here and you found our poison, arsenic. Mm-hmm. The aliens are nitrogen-based, right? You make the same move, down and over, and where do you find yourself?
Oh, yes, okay, so, this one's a bit obscure. Dave, have you ever seen the film Evolution?
Yes, I have.
Fuck me, these guys are idiots. Okay, first of all, I really enjoy the whole, like, the Kane badness thing, but... Because, so, if you haven't seen this before, it's David Duchovny, Orlando Jones...
Yep. And,
Sean William Scott is in it as yes. well? Yes. Julianne then Moore?
Yeah, which is amazing. She plays the female lead.
Yeah. Look, it's a good cast. Really fucking good cast.
Oh, it is. And it's not a terrible film.
I really enjoy it. It's fucking stupid. It's one of the dumbest films you'll ever see. But it's, look, it's enjoyable. So many different things. Like, for starters, those two, like, the two dumb, slightly overweight, let's say, those guys. How did they get into university? How the fuck did they get into that university, now, college, whatever?
Is it a meteor that strikes again? Is that where the contamination comes through, the new organism? For anyone who hasn't seen it, basically the plot of the film is that, if memory serves, a meteor comes down, bringing with it this organism that starts to rapidly grow and incorporate the life around it, and apparently have alterations of the atmosphere. The U.S. government shows up to try and quarantine this thing. The life is evolving very fast, so it goes through its kind of own version of a, you know, Jurassic or prehistoric development in terms of the period that it's going through. Yeah. Different creatures develop, and eventually the creatures start to spread into the real world. David Duchovny is this kind of dickhead university scientist who, for some reason, really wants full access to this project that he has no ability to control whatsoever.
Keeps
resisting the attempts of Julianne Moore and the U.S. government that's coming in with all of their resources and all of their capabilities, and he keeps trying to interfere with their research or get involved or to try and... But he is the good guy. He is the protagonist of the film that we are supposed to be cheering for. Yes.
Yeah. And the... It's why is it called evolution? Call it panspermia. Like, I panspermia, for those who don't know, is like the theory that human life or life on Earth was seeded by, you know, a meteor from somewhere else, which I think is like really interesting. Like, the rapid evolution that happens here is real dumb. But there's just the science. Look, it's not meant to be taken seriously as a movie, but I mean, the scientists that you have on board here are just so fucking incapable and stupid.
Irresponsible.
Yeah. When he's looking, so he's got these single-celled organisms that he's brought back to his lab. He's just got them on, like, a slide and a microphone in, like, his office. He's not in a lab or anything. Nope. He's just checking them out on his desk. Isolate that shit. Like, I don't care if it breaks out later. It's still your fault for not having it contained properly. And, like, get some fucking PhD students on board, man. Like,
and know your limits. Know when to, like... There are a perfect example of there are specialists in my field, right? Veterinary surgeons, cardiologists, yeah. internal med, emergency doctors. There is nothing that pisses one of these specialists off. Someone that has undergone training for an additional, you know, 6 years on top of me to study one organ system is when a regular vet comes along and they're just like, yeah, like, I know that you had that dog on all those medications for its heart, but I just decided to take it off a couple of them. And the cardiologist will be like, what the fuck are you doing? It is the exact same within the scientific field, where if this random university professor who's like, I teach biology, has a bunch of people that show up and they're like, hey, we're microbiologists, we're evolutionary biologists, we're xenobiologists, we're coming in to take over this project. Stay in your lane.
Yeah.
Like,
yes. Also, like, so hang on, because I'd forgotten about it, but there was that whole Kane madness thing.
Yeah.
So he was discharged from the army after creating an anthrax vaccine that led to terribly debilitating side effects. Like, I'm sorry, but if you're close to creating an anthrax vaccine and you've got some debilitating side effects, you still keep going with that research. Like, somebody will fund you.
Right. They don't throw you out for side effects. They say fix the side effects.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes. I mean,
that's when the birth control pill was first developed. Side effects were awful. But, you know, we worked on it. They got better. The birth control pill is now an option. Might be an option for men soon, too. It's just... Anyway. Okay, all right. Well, look, I think that'll do us for now. We'll be back next week with a bit more of this. It'll probably be a shorter episode. We've got the Easter break coming up. I hope you got... actually, no, hang on. Yeah, we've got the Easter break coming up. So, you know, we'll... we're going to have a week off. We might have a quick, shorter episode for you, though. But in the meantime, if you want to get in touch, we are at Twitter. I'm on SamPerrinNTNU. You can find Adam at HarsickAdam. You can contact the show at cinematica.animalia@gmail.com. Fuck, Adam usually does this. How does he remember it all?
Visit our website at...
yes, visit our website, cinematicaanimalia.com. If you want to explore some of the more science-y shit that that Adam and I do, we run ecologyforthemasses.com, which I actually forgot to plug at the start of the show, which is odd. I didn't introduce myself either. My name's Sam, if you hadn't figured that out. yeah, I think that's it. So as we always say... the monsters aren't real, but the science is. Oh, that was fun to say. I do enjoy Adam's little catchphrase. Yeah.
Yeah, all right,
see you guys.
Bye.